Yeah, don't you know, eh? By God, for sure. Well, I skipped the smorgasbord this morning, and I was going to go down to a smorgasbord for lunch, but I decided I would go out and do a little ice fishing. I caught me one and a half trays. I got a block. You know, I was, you know, fishing there, got that whole tray of ice right off the get-go. And I knew it was going to be a good day, don't you know, eh? Aye, for sure. Okay, here, you know, I'm going to turn you over to Fishing Frank and Robert there. He's got Robert in the chair across from him, and don't you know, it's just ridiculous. Yeah, I don't know why I do that. But one of these days, I'll actually figure it out. I think what put me in the mood was we got some guys coming down from up north, and these guys, they're out fishing, and Mark and August and their buddies, they're out there, they're trying for a little cobia and black drum. Robert, good morning, Robert, or good afternoon, Robert.
Hello, Frank.
Okay. Isn't it nice we met, even though we drove all the way up here in the truck?
Right.
Yes, you know, kind but we got to say hello, everybody, you know.
We that's had good entertainment on the drive, too.
Oh, man. Before I get to what Mark and August and them guys are doing, I got to tell you, I've learned a lot this week. I was out, and I'm hooking up snook lights behind the house. I want putting my underwater lights back in, and we ran the conduit all underneath the, you know, the seawall and trying to, you know, put a run a outlet a little further along. I learned GFI outlets are like circuit breakers, and they're rated for like 10 amp, 15 amp, 20 amp, and the one I got isn't powerful enough to run my thing, so I wasted $18 on that. I got to go down and get a stronger one. And I learned that some people are morons. Literally, what, I mean,
was just learning that?
Everybody makes a mistake, right, Robert?
Yes, oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
We all make mistakes. This idiot drives off from the gas pump with the hose still in the side of the truck.
Snap. Wow, I've never seen that. That's really true? People do that?
We watched it.
Oh, wow.
And the guy snaps the hose off the pump, drives off, and then comes back. And we see him pulling back in. And he goes inside and says, hey, I pulled your hose off, but I brought it back. And don't I have change coming? Don't I have change coming? I would go in and be like, oh, my God, what do I owe you? I broke your pump. You know, what, you know, can I pay you, you know, for putting it back together? I screwed up. I broke the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Robert, wouldn't...
He was very nonchalant about it and just...
Nonchalant, my butt. He was literally going, come on, well, you still owe me money.
Well, no. But I mean, about the pump. Hey, I broke it off, and I know it's just a quick disconnect, and you can just pop it right back on, and I want my change back.
I mean, I watch people take food, you know, we're back to Publix, where they got to throw it out just because they decided they didn't want to cook that night or something. What is wrong? I mean, my goodness, it just made me crazy. Have you ever seen that, RJ?
No, and my guess would be that guy was not a fisherman.
I don't know, but all I can tell
you... Because he wouldn't have survived an hour out on the water.
I mean...
Right.
My goodness, I just don't get it all. Anyway, I know it's a fishing show, we're going to get to fishing. But some things just kind of spark up in your head, and you're like, my God, I just saw a guy wreck somebody's property. Now, not a big... And it's made to break away because people do that on a regular basis. But you still have to pay somebody to fix it.
Yeah.
Stand up and say, hey, I screwed up. I broke it. Can I pay you, you know, for my mistakes? That's what real people do. That's what real people do. Not good. I can't believe. All right. Anyway, I'm going to get back happy. Mark and August, these guys are out there fishing, and they want to get cobia and black drum. And that's their goldfish. Now, Robert, what are the odds on the cobia? I'm going to say it's pretty slim.
I'm going to say real slim.
Yeah, because...
Just because of how sporty it is out there with the wind. I mean...
Yeah, if you could get a nice calm day with a lot of sunshine, you get a pretty good shot at a cobia at the Alligator Creek Reef or any of the near shore reefs. Because
yeah.
We've been hearing regular reports.
Absolutely.
But with this wind...
This wind's going to make it pretty tough. And just, you know, not enjoyable. I mean, not only is it windy, but it's brisk.
Yeah, it's real brisk out there. And, boy, this morning, 32 degrees in my house. What people don't realize about cold weather, the coldest time of any day, absolute coldest time of the day, is for the 2 hours after sunrise.
Yep.
You know, if once when it's dark out, any heat is kind of sitting close to the ground. But as soon as that sun hits and all that heat starts to rise, it takes that air and lifts it up, and the colder air moves in. And the coldest time of the day is the 2 hours after sunrise.
Yeah.
And I can remember sitting there one night when I was young, and I had been working a carnival in, I think, Alabama, I think I was in. I came coming down to Florida. It was freezing cold. And I was up in the panhandle, and I saw the sun come up. I thought, oh, good, it's going to get warm. And then it really got cold.
Yep.
And that's what kind of led me to all that, finding out that something about the exchange of heat in the atmosphere. But, okay, if these guys are going to go out, and August is, you know, the guy's buddy or son or I don't know. But anyway, the group, really nice people. You talked to them for quite a while.
Yeah, they were real pleasant.
What was the conversation about?
We were talking about some of the different sharks in the area and some of the big sharks and small sharks, and then started on tarpon fishing because they come down several times during the year. So I was giving them some highlights of some better times of the year for some of the different stuff.
Okay. Pretty vague. So we're going to get more specific. We're going to talk about, I think their odds are excellent on the black drum.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah.
All right, let's start off with what would be your two top baits for the black drum?
Honestly, frozen shrimp, peeled. You know, I'd peel the shell off the shrimp. That's going to be my first choice, and then my second choice would probably be a blue crab.
So you're putting out there naked shrimp on a hook? They got no covering at all?
Not at all.
Naked shrimp, and they're on the hook, and they're exposed to the world that way. Everything's all soft and fleshy and sticking out of there.
Yeah.
You really think that makes a difference?
I find that attractive.
You find that attractive? we got naked shrimp on the hook. No shell, no clothing at all.
You know, and the thing that always bothers me about that is, why is it that something that eats blue crabs whole, has crushers in its throat, can inhale them without a problem, it's one of their favorite foods, but
and
yet
literally
they don't like a regular shrimp as often as they do a naked shrimp.
Yeah, a hard shrimp that's just, or a hard crab that's got a shell. You literally, I've hit them with pliers trying to break the shell open 2-3 times before I could crack it.
Right.
So
it doesn't make any sense to me.
Why do they prefer a peeled shrimp?
I don't know. I honestly don't. But I know that you'll get a lot more bites with the peeled shrimp than you will with a regular shrimp.
And what we're talking about is taking the shell back by the tail. And I usually put my thumbnail underneath it and peeling it just like you would if you were going to eat it, which includes leaving that very back tail section on. So the last two segments of the shell is all segmented. If it was one hard shell, they wouldn't be able to move their tail.
Right.
So it's the little strips where you've got a segment, you know, at the first, second, third, I don't know, they got 6, 8, 10 joints on them. But one of the things about this is it brings you to the point where it's why it's okay to put a hook in a shrimp.
Right.
Because you can't grow new nerve endings on your shrimp. I mean, if you're sitting there and you lose your entire outer body once a month and the whole thing falls off, you cannot rejuvenate or regenerate new nerve endings to the outside. So if you pick up a shrimp and kiss it, or you pick up a shrimp and put a hook into it, he didn't like either one. Both of them get him mad.
Right.
So, you know, there's no real difference. They get upset about either one, but they don't have the same pain sensors. We don't want to get off on cartoon land and, you know, equating human values. When you get stuck by a hook, it hurts, and you go, oh, I don't want to do that again. That hurt.
Right.
But a shrimp, they just got a hard shell, and it falls off like a blue crab and several other species.
A spider.
Spider.
It's an exoskeleton animal.
Oh, really? So spiders don't feel the pain things either that way. Because you can't generate those type of nerve endings once a month. It's physically impossible. But getting back to the black drum and the canals. Now, black drum, especially when the water gets colder, If you've ever been swimming up north, and I know I use this analogy a lot, you're out there and you're doing the chubby dunk. We don't skinny dip, most of us, anymore. We kind of chubby dunk. You're out there, you go along, and you're swimming, and you're kind of horizontal in the water. Then you stop and you tread water, and the water's nice and warm, and all of a sudden your feet hit down about 5-6 feet. It gets really icy cold, so you're like, oh my God. You lift your feet up real quick.
Yep.
It's the opposite effect down here. So you got the first foot of water, which is the coldest. Gradually, each foot down gets warmer and warmer. So down 4 to 4 or 5 feet, the water's going to be much warmer than it is at the surface.
Correct.
So because that colder water, the water started warm and the water's trying to cool it down. Up north, if you're in Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or Maryland or one place, the water's starting out cold, and then the sun's trying to warm it up. That's why it's colder in the bottom, warmer at the top. But here we started out warm or hot, and the weather's trying to cool that water. And it takes a week for it to get down 3 feet. It takes 2 weeks to go down 4 feet, 5 feet. And after a month or so, you're going to get down to 5-6 foot where that water's warming or cooling down. But for right now, once you're down 6 feet, it's still pretty warm water.
Right.
So that's why you're looking for areas that have more than 4 or 5 feet of water. 6, 8, 10 feet of water is better, 12 feet. So you're looking for a canal that has a bridge because they like hanging around the structure.
Yes.
What's up with hanging around the bridge pilings?
Mostly it has to do with the crabs that they're feeding on, and they'll also feed on all the little critters that are around the barnacles and the oysters that are growing on those pilings.
Tasty little snacks.
Exactly.
Okay. So you can actually, it's a food source.
Yeah. I mean, there's actually been certain times of year. I haven't seen it in several years, but used to be at the 41 Bridge, you could go down there, and at certain times of year, they move the black drum move in a little bit heavier numbers.
I remember it being springtime as the water was warming up.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact time, so I'll go with you on that. But you could walk along the bridge up above, walking the bridge, and look down at the pilings and actually see like white marks on the barnacles or oysters and swear that maybe somebody hit it with their boat or bumped it or something. And it was actually from black drum actually coming up and mouthing.
Right,
those
chewing
barnacles
on
and oysters. And
they're not actually trying to eat the barnacles and oysters. They're trying to, I don't know how the best way to put this, but there's a ton of little tiny fish and crabs and everything else,
worms
that live in between all those shells. It's like a giant apartment complex for bait. You know, it's a housing complex, and they live inside of these things.
I like that analogy. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So what they do is they put their mouth up against it and kind of suck in while they pull their jaws together and trying to suck all the stuff out from in between there. That's where all the food is.
Right.
So I don't know of a human analogy except, you know,
it's a big hickey on the piling.
Yeah,
there's a good way to describe it.
As long as, you know, rub some cotton candy on her neck first. Okay.
Right.
But yeah, they're just trying to suck the stuff off there. So, because people would get confused thinking they will eat the stuff out of the inside of the barnacles and stuff and
absolutely
actually swallow the barnacles, big calcium build up there. So, but that's why they're hanging around those pilings. So you want deeper water so it's warmer, so the fish are more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you want around structure where they've got a food source. And so that's where you're looking for black drum. Now, that structure could also be a dock.
Yes.
It could be anything.
A boat.
A boat, if it doesn't move much. Look around. When you go through the areas, kind of take a mental note if that boat's moved at all.
Right.
If the less the boat moves, the more likely there are to be fish underneath it. And especially some of these great big boats. Like you go back in through parts of PGI, they got 35, 50, 60, 80-foot boats. And they end up really not going anywhere.
Right.
But the guys who own them want to keep the motors running. So they'll go out, they'll put it in forward, they'll put it in reverse, and blow big holes out underneath the boat.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, weakens their seawall up because you have to have dirt on the outside of your seawall to hold it up. So just giving you a little idea, there's goods and bads about doing that kind of stuff. But it's those using motors, making sure they run, you know, they put it in gear, then they put it in neutral, then put it in reverse, and going back and forth, blowing those big holes out. But if the boat doesn't move and they get new food sources, deeper water, more structure, more cover, yeah, that's
all those barnacles and oysters build up right underneath the hull of that boat. I mean, I've seen some of those boats in there that would normally be floating in 12 inches of water that are floating in 16 inches of water now because it's got so many oysters and barnacles underneath them.
Yeah, that's very heavy growth. And I wish I could say, you know, okay, Fish and Frank, and I'm supposed to be this smart, you know, I'm supposed to know all this stuff. I got a 24-foot skiff, a DLX, that a buddy of mine's going to buy from me. And I was out test running to make sure it works good. It was only going like 22, 23 miles an hour. I'm like, what's wrong with the motor? I send it over. I go to pull it out of the water, send it over to SOS to have Jerry go through the motor and figure out what's going on over to SOS Marine. And I look, and there's like 2 inches of barnacles on the front of the boat. It's like putting a parachute on the boat.
Yeah.
The boat's got to be slick in order to run. And if the boat's not slick, then what happens is it's harder to get it through the water. It's like putting the brakes on. So it went from a 35-mile-an-hour boat down to a 22-25-mile-an-hour boat, and I was too dumb to realize I hadn't cleaned the bottom in a long time.
Right.
So I wish I could say I was better about that.
Now, going back to your seawall theory, too, about washing it out, that's okay. Another reason why a lot of fish move into the canals and the black drum. Because you taught me years ago, you know, the seawalls act kind of like a solar panel. All that concrete is absorbing the heat and can keep some of the surrounding area just a little bit warmer in some instances.
Well, look at this morning. It was 32 degrees at my house after the sun came up. It was, it started out at 34, went down to 33, hit 32 within an hour of the sun coming up. And 32 degrees, that's god-awful cold.
It's really cold.
And that water's going to take a long time to warm up, but the sun hitting that concrete cap of the seawall, it's going to absorb the sunshine. It's going to get warmer and warmer and warmer. By the end of the day, that's going to be radiating heat.
Right. And now, a useless bit of knowledge, too, like when you're fishing canals, the north-facing canals are usually a little bit warmer than any of the other surrounding canals.
Okay, north-facing. You mean ones that run east and west or north and south?
Ones that would run north and south. But the north end of that canal would actually be warmer than the surrounding canals because the sun is always facing towards the north the entire time. It's a trick that bass fishermen have used for 50 years when fishing reservoirs and big lakes for pre-spawn bass. Pre-spawn bass, you know, they're always looking for that 1 to 2, 3 degree temperature difference. The north end of the lake would always be 1 to 2 degrees warmer than the other parts of the lake. So you could find fish going on to bed a couple days to even a couple weeks ahead of time of the rest of the lake.
Yeah, start that pre-spawn feed where they can throw the crankbaits at them and, yep, and work up. Speaking of bass right now, we just had a friend, Morris Campbell, freshwater charter boat captain, who is fishing the stick mark and getting consistent 8 and 10 pounders off of there.
He got an 11-8 the other day.
And it was funny because he was telling me that they had the shiners out, and he told the guy, grab the rod, that one's going off. And he says, no, you get it. I'm going to, you know, he had just got his fish up to the boat. He wanted to take it off because it was like an 8-plus pounder, you know, nice fish.
Right.
So Morris grabs the other rod, starts fighting it, brings it in. Wow, this is a big fish. And it turns out Morris brought in the 11-something pounder. And his customer, who should have had that fight with the fish, passed on it because he was already landing an 8-pounder and didn't want to be interrupted.
Wow.
So gave up almost 12-pounder to finish landing an 8. So
wow.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, but still, an 8-pounder could be a once-in-a-lifetime fish for most people.
Pretty much awesome. Now, the only thing about it is, Morris, if you want a lot of bass, you don't mind smaller fish, you know, the 1 to 4 pounders, the Rapala Ripstop is excellent over there. Spinnerbaits, silver willow blade, white and chartreuse, a skirt on them. They're hitting steady on the 2 to 3 pounders with that over there at the Stick Marsh. Pretty much any of that general area on the East Coast doing the same thing. But if you're looking for the big bass, they're actually shiner feeding right now.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of, now, black drum, I'm going to say the canals close to Fisherman's Village and PGI. Bass Inlet would be a real good one. If you go through Ponce and go out to where it opens up real wide, the first dock on the left is pretty good. It's hard to describe, but if you get into that big opening, you're coming up from Ponce, you go through that long canal there, and it starts to open up real wide. If you put your hand out, your left hand out, about a 45-degree angle, there's a couple of docks that are an angled seawall. They're not, like, in the canal or on the big section. It's kind of an angle thing there. A couple of big docks there, a ton of snapper, and some really nice black drum under those, too. What's going on in Port Charlotte for the black drum? I know there's some up in the Ackerman and going along the O'Hara underneath the bridges on Midway.
Yep.
Any other places you can think of?
Spring Lake has had a few. And then also I've been actually getting a couple of reports the last couple of days of guys seeing them but not really catching them at Eljo Bean.
Okay.
And so Eljo Bean can be a really good spot at times, but I think those fish are just starting to move in and people are starting to see them. So I think over the next couple of days, we might see some better activity there and even some of those surrounding canals there in the Gulf Cove area.
All right. This time of year, we see a lot of these mutant black drum.
Yeah.
These are actually mutants. We don't know. And there is no one who actually knows this. I'm going to go out and catch one, either by hook and line. And Carl said he was getting them to hit by taking a shrimp and leaving them sit on the deck and putting them on the hook and then kind of pounding them flat. Make sure you don't pound on the shrimp where your hook is. But kind of pounding them flat, getting them all mushed up, putting them on just a hook free line and tossing it out in front of them about 3 feet, so it's drifting down in front of them as they come along. Now, these black drum are pink, they're white, they're orange, they're mixtures of those colors. You can see them cruising along right by the surface. Almost impossible to get them to eat. But that crushed up, nasty shrimp on a just drifting, floating down in front of him, he's got a couple to hit on. Now, the reason we call them mutant is, A, they're weird colors, but they're not as tall as a black drum. They're definitely black drum. The fins, the everything about it. But what's your opinion, Robert? They are, black drum and red drum are genetically close enough to spawn. Do you think this is a half breed?
I don't know.
I believe so. We got to get one, take it up to Greg Palatka at the Biology Center, and see if he can run a DNA for us.
Yeah, I would be real curious to know if there is something distinctly different about them.
Yeah, because there's something wrong with those fish. They're not right, you know. And we hear every year I get tons of emails. One of the people is saying my email doesn't work. It does, but if I don't empty it out at least every day or every other day, it's too full. I got 64 emails this morning, and then at 10 o'clock I went through, redid it again. I got another 32 emails.
Right.
You know, I get a lot of emails every day, so it just gets full. So if you go to frank@fishandfranks.com and it kicks it back, just do it again a little bit later, because I try to keep that empty, but I sometimes forget. All right. We got you got a picture of what, a jaguar on a tree by a river, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but that wasn't here.
No, that was in Costa Rica. But here, one of my favorite stories was over on Hog Island, and a good friend of mine saw it, and I literally, it's one of the things I really wish I would have been able to witness. One of the Florida, either, you know, big Florida cats sitting on a tree over the water, laying on the trunk of a tree, watching in the water, and he's fishing, and he notices the cat, looks at it, and then all of a sudden the cat jumps into the water, grabs a big snook by the back of the head, and then swims and splashes his way with this 30-some, 40-some inch snook back up in the land where he proceeds to eat it. But he literally jumped from a tree into the water to get that fish and drug it up on shore.
That would be really awesome to witness.
I don't think people realize how many different types of ways animals feed here. Getting onto the fishing, let's do top five this week. What's your top five this week?
Crappie is by far number one.
All right, crappie. Let's just go down the list, and then we'll come back where they are and what they're doing. Yeah.
Crappie, trout, sheep's head, and bass. Basically, I have top four this week. I don't have five.
We didn't have five to go through.
Yeah, well, the weather was so
Wouldn't
weird.
Wouldn't you throw black drum in on that for your top in your top five?
Yeah, I guess that could be the fifth one, absolutely, because of the numbers that I've got in the last couple days.
If you're going out this week, crappie in freshwater, trout in saltwater, sheephead in saltwater, bass, freshwater, they're in pre-spawn mode, and then black drum, mostly canal fishing right now.
Right.
Let's go back to crappie. Where are we doing crappie, and anything special they're hitting?
Minnows have been by far the best thing going. A lot of guys have been trying to use jigs just to locate them, then they switch over to the minnows, but the jig bite's been a little off this week. So,
what's the best colors in jigs, and are we doing marabou, or are we doing plastic twin tail?
Most of the guys use the plastic beetle spins.
Okay, you know, so you're using a beetle spin in place of a jig.
Yep, and they're using the white one as the number one seller, and then the yellow one's the second best seller.
So silver or gold blades?
Silver blades.
All right, silver-bladed beetle spin, white bodies and yellow bodies, number one and two. Minnows now, is it a freeline minnow situation, or is it a bobber?
No, it's definitely using a bobber.
So minnows under a bobber, number one way to go.
And setting it at about a foot and a half to 2.5 feet seems to be the numbers that people are looking for.
Oh, you're dying on me here? I thought you were over the death syndrome.
Oh, I am.
Yeah? You sound like you're dying.
No, I'm feeling much better.
All right.
Frog every
I feel it much better, sir. Can I have some more, please?
Right.
Yeah. Frank, make me talk for another hour, Frank.
Right.
Please. More, sir.
The canals off of Price Road and Raintree have been working.
Look at that.
Thank
RJ
you,
likes you. He brought you water and everything.
Nice. Thank you.
You know, You know, don't pamper him, for God's sakes. You know, I just finally get him into shape. Now you're going to pamper him, spoil him.
I don't want him coughing on me. That was the main
thing. Yeah, right? Well, I can honestly tell you, he's been caught. We did the Charlotte County Boat Show last week, which was awesome. Next year, we got to get you to come down and do a live remote. We had such a good time. I got to tell you, the people of Southwest Florida are amazing. The tourists that come here are amazing. We had so much fun. It was literally a blast. I would say, what, from 10 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I don't think at any moment there's less than 30 people in the booth. It was a staggering amount of fun. We had all the seminars were packed. We had a great time. I think our next show is the Big Boy Toys Expo. That's coming up in February. I think we're going to be doing the seminars there.
Over there in Punta Gorda.
For all you people listening here in Northport and around the world, we are going to start in March doing the fishing club meetings here at the WKDW radio studios in Northport, Florida at 97.5 FM on Tuesday nights. It'll be once a month. We're doing, we're expanding out the Luigi's thing where we've been doing that for the last 10 years. We're going to do Tuesday and Wednesday nights at Luigi's, then the following Tuesday night here at Common Grounds, and we're going to get all that set up. We're going to be starting in March. At least we hope at this point that's what the starting date looks like. We were hoping to start this month, but when Tuesday night is all right at Luigi's, but Wednesday night is Valentine's Day. And we're not doing the fishing club Valentine's Day. So it's going to be Tuesday and Tuesday in February at Luigi's. And then starting in March, we're going to be up here at the WKDW studios. You guys got to see the studios. You got to come to Common Grounds. This is an awesome place. And this is becoming our second or our third home. We've got the Port Charlotte store, the Fort Myers store, and Ingman Marine Boat Dealership. Then we've got the Traveling Road Show that we do all the boat shows with. And now WKDW, this is another home. And amazingly great people up here. All right. Because I don't play well with others. I really don't. I mean, I wish I was the great guy people thought I am, but I'm not.
He runs with scissors, too.
Yeah, I run with scissors. So I'm not that guy, but man, what a great. All right. So anyway, we're on to the second one. Sea trout. Where's the best place for sea trout?
Most of your bigger sea trout are coming from the Lemon Bay area still and Pine Island. But with all this cold weather we've had the last 10 days, there's a lot of trout starting to move up to the mouths of the canals on both the Port Charlotte side and the PGI
side. If I was going in Port Charlotte, I'd go on East Spring Lake. If you're coming from Port Charlotte Beach and you go up the West Spring Lake Canal, turn right onto the East Spring Lake Canal. It's pretty narrow during the first 100, 200 yards. And then as it opens up, right as it opens up, on the left-hand side, there's a nice deep hole there. And when it's cold out, that's where I go trout fishing because there's usually a lot of trout there. If I was going to go up, say, putting at Port Charlotte Beach and I wanted to see if there was some trout close by, put in the boat ramp and go up into the Sunrise Waterway, which you just follow around the basin where the boat ramp is and go up that first canal, go up three canals, go off to the left, anchor on the side of the canal opposite where the houses are, and cast out in the middle, shrimp under bobber, popping cork, whatever. Just let them drift and see if there's some trout there. Usually a little smaller than what I'm going to find on that spot on East Spring Lake. But if you were going up to Lemon Bay, would you go up by the park there, or would you go more Indian Mounds or back over by the pier?
I would probably be going more in the vicinity of the Indian Mounds, between the Indian Mounds and the park.
Gotcha.
Just because that seems to be where the most feedback that I've been personally getting. And since I'm not super familiar with that area, I'd be sticking with what I've been taught.
Yeah. To me, if... next one, number three, sheephead. Now, my number one place for sheephead is in Lemon Bay, where Ski Alley, when you're in Stump Pass, you go north up Ski Alley. That's that little channel between where the park is and that first island. When you get up to the north there, those docks along the shoreline there, and they had a bunch of boats. You sit out there. I think there's still a few boats there. But along those docks is some of the best sheephead fishing I've ever had there. I like those docks. And that continues kind of up to the bridge. Right. But where sheephead, now there I'm just freelining shrimp. I tail hook them, and instead of putting the hook through the tail, I hold the shrimp so I can put the point of the hook right into the tail. Then I thread the hook down into the tail, bring it out so the point of the hook is on the side where the legs are. The eye of the hook is hidden in the flipper of the tail, and I toss it up in there. Now, I'm going to backtrack because I do that after I get a bite and I lose a shrimp, because I'll head hook them or tail hook them where they're a little more open and the sheephead are more likely to hit them that way. And when I come back with only a head or only a part of the tail, then I thread the hook in there, and then I've got those sheephead. It hooks them almost every time. I use that gold number two Mustad. I think it's a 37. No, God. I'm getting old. Do you notice? I'm really learning this old age things. You know, you may not think of it, folks.
All it's worth.
Well, I now know what the bathroom at Publix, Lowe's, the studios here. I mean, when I was in my 20s or 30s, I don't think I knew where any of the bathrooms were.
Right.
But, man, I get out of the truck. I'm looking for a bathroom nowadays. I don't know what the heck it is. But, geez, welcome to this wonderful old age. They call it the golden years because you look at the color of your undershorts. So, I'm telling you, it's bad. Sheephead, what's your best bait for sheephead and where? Where's your spot? I gave you mine.
Well, my spot's going to be fishing from shore, because it's, I don't know, because I don't own a boat. Basically, I would probably be...
Now, I don't have to sell that one. I'll give you that 24 skiff if you want it.
No, it's okay. I appreciate it.
You sure? I got the skiff sitting, or it's on a trailer. I can have it at your house, by Sunday.
No, I appreciate it.
You sure you don't want the boat?
No, I don't want to catch sheep.
I don't want you to figure you're missing out. Nope. Come on. I don't know what's going on here. I'll give you a boat if you want a boat.
June? That's when I want a boat.
All right, so I'm gonna tell him he can't have the boat till after tarpon season.
Nah.
All right, so that's going to be parked at your house Sunday.
No.
It's 24-foot Carolina skiff.
I don't have a dock right now.
Well, you still got the dock. You just don't have the thing on it. You just... put something down to get out to the boat.
No.
All right.
Not right now. Thank you, though.
RJ, you heard it. I would give him a boat. He didn't want a boat, right?
That's what I heard.
All right.
Biggest problem, I can't fix a boat if I break it.
I can fix the boat. All right, let's move on. Go. What's your best spot for all sheephead? Right.
Honestly, I'd probably be going out to Placida. Placida would probably be my number one pick from shore.
Mainland side or Gaspar Island side?
Honestly, probably the mainland side right now, because most of the red tide has moved out of there in this last couple weeks. So the sheephead are starting to move in there a little bit more. And with this colder water, even some of the more sheephead have started to move off of those reefs like Novak and Helens that are all real close to Gaspar La Paz there. So starting to see a better influx of fish right there in that area.
All right. So I would say if I'm going offshore, I like fishing for sheephead. I do like Novak's Mary, and I like the barge, the Palm Island Ferry.
Palm Island Ferry is always and a good one.
M13 is another pretty good one. But They're all on fishandfranks.com. If you say, where are these places? Go to fishandfranks.com, click the Reefs and Wrecks button, and there's directions to all that stuff there. Bass fishing. What's going on bass fishing? Now, we know the East Coast is absolutely on fire with shiners. How's Northport doing? What's going on up on price?
Kind of the same thing going on. The shiner fishing has been really off the chain this past week. I've had quite a few guys buying 2 and 3 dozen shiners rather than their usual dozen.
Right. Did our Tuesday shiner guy not show up?
Yeah.
He did or did not?
He did.
Yeah. Did he show up? Yep. I couldn't tell what you said.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, he did.
Remember, I'm hard of hearing. Old man, you must be specific and loud. Okay.
Sorry.
But I didn't think we had any shiners left.
There were shiners in there.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see any. But we got another guy coming today, right?
Right.
He'll be there sometime today.
Right.
So, all right. Because I didn't see any shiners. I went back to feed my goldfish, and I saw was minnows.
Okay. They sold a whole bunch of shiners yesterday.
I guess they did, because there wasn't much left. All right. Lures working well on bass right now?
A handful of guys are still buying some plastic worms, but they're mixing up some really weird colors. I mean, I've had some guys buying the real dark colors to even that light bubblegum colored worm. I mean, they're kind of all over the map lately.
Yeah, because if I was going out to Rotunda, I don't know what I would pick, either a June bug or the bubblegum pink.
See, I'm going to go June bug or purple, one of the two.
Yeah, because the Rotunda canals have had some great fish in them, and we're getting a lot of bycatch. Guys are catching bass, and then the snook are hitting the worms. There's a few with a little tarpon. But I think the reason they're getting them is they're letting those worms go all the way to the bottom and twitching them, and pretty much everything over there is coming off the bottom with worms.
Yeah.
And I think it's still too cold for them to get in that spawn move where the crankbaits are going to work very well.
Yeah, and I've never been a good crankbait user anyway, so that's usually going to be my last lure. But the shiners is going to be my first choice just because it's consistent.
Okay. Sure fishing, you don't need a 12-foot long...
Surf fishing.
Surf fishing. All right. Well, I don't have my glasses on.
That's all right. My handwriting's pretty lousy.
All right. So what is that note about?
Because a lot of guys have been coming in and talking about surf fishing lately and thinking that they need the stereotypical 12-foot surf rods.
Well, you know, guys, if you're out there in Jersey and you're sitting there and you want to go out, you got a continental shelf out there. You got to get past the continental shelf, right?
No.
No? Well, we don't have a continental shelf.
No, but the way their beaches are set up are totally different than ours. They want to get past the second breaker out there. And even over in Miami, Lauderdale, West Palm,
you need
that long surf rod for there.
I would say the vast majority of the fish are caught within 5-6 feet of the beach.
Yes.
As far as snook,
on our side.
Redfish, even when you're looking for pompano, you've got where the beach is, and then as the water builds it up, you've got beach and kind of a trough and then a little sandbar. On top of that sandbar out there is where I would say 80% of the Spanish mackerel and pompano are caught on that secondary bar out there.
Right, but it's still only, 30 to 50 feet from the shoreline at the very most?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to cast a long ways out.
You notice how he asked me questions right as I'm drinking coffee?
Yeah.
It was good, Robert. Just kind of make me swallow quick.
There you go.
When I'm choking and flopping around on the floor and you're hearing all this, banging around. That's me gasping for air because he's...
Just checking your reflexes. You said you're getting old, but you seem to do all right.
All right. I'm flopping around the floor, coughing, having a fit here. All right. Getting on to something, they came out with a study on bonnethead sharks because bonnethead sharks are cold water shark. They love this colder water. They're everywhere. They eat shrimp. You can throw it out, and it's an amazing bycatch while you're trout fishing or anything else. And these bonnet, they're good to eat. And
well, and they're a blast because you can use them on, you can catch them on light tackle. But most importantly, how many of your family members, grandkids come down here and say they want to come to Florida and fish with grandpa?
I do.
And I want to catch a shark. You know, all want to catch a shark.
But now remember, they're not bonnet head sharks when you live here and you have visitors from up north. When you have visitors come down from up north, they're shovel nose. That's a shark.
That's more manly.
Bonnet head, shovel nose. Okay, so we call them shovel nose when we're dealing with friends that come down up north. That way, they feel better because they caught shovel nose sharks. But new study came out. What was up with this study? What's going on with that?
A new study came out where they've been testing like the stomach samples of bonnet heads, and their primary diet is crustaceans, shrimp and crabs. Always has been. There's certain times of year where they eat a little bit of fish, but their major diet
is
crustaceans.
Half a dozen on fish and literally hundreds, if not thousands, on shrimp.
Absolutely. Me too.
So anyway, what about the diet now?
So during the study of their stomach contents, they were finding a lot of seagrass inside their stomachs. So they just were assuming for quite a while that it was because of their diet of going into the seagrass.
And you know what happens when you assume, boys and girls.
Right. They're digging and around for the crabs and the shrimp that live in that seagrass. Well, then they started to experiment where they were actually taking the seagrass and putting it in the tanks with the bonnetheads, because bonnetheads are one of the easier sharks to keep in an aquarium situation.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And they found that they were actually intentionally eating the grass, and they're digesting it and processing some of it.
All right. I guess it really kind of surprised me when you said that, because I wasn't thinking of a shark that would eat grass.
Right.
You know, I just never thought about it. But then again, I watched my dog do it in the yard.
Right. And I mean, by all means, it's not a sustainable food, but they must be doing it for some kind of nutrient content of it.
Well, I can tell you, I go to the grocery store and buy fiber pills, and I know why I do it.
Right.
You know, and there's a whole fiber issue going on here. And I'm thinking maybe the sharks are in the same boat as I am. You know, makes everything a lot easier. Metamucil rocks. All right. So anyway.
Is this a fishing show or an old guy talk?
This is an old guy show. I'm an old guy, and it's literally Fishing Frank's, you know, the Fishing Frank.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It does have your name in it.
See? Okay. I'm allowed latitude because, I think the only reason people listen to the show is because we stay so much on topic. When we start out, you know exactly where we're going, what the topic will be. But I am literally shocked that a shark eats grass.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising to me.
Yeah, it's something I would have never guessed. So bonnethead or shovel nose. They're awesome fish. You don't need a steel leader. You don't need anything. Just pretend you're trout fishing and you'll probably catch them. You do have to be close to the bottom. So if you're in more than...
You do have to be careful because they do have teeth.
They will bite you.
By saying you don't need a steel leader is not really 100% accurate, because they can still bite your line off and they will still give you stitches or take a fingertip off if you are not careful.
So
they are still a shark. I don't care what name you call them by, they still have sharp teeth.
So when dealing with a shovel nose, you pick him up by the leader, hold him, grab him by the back of the head. That just like you would a wayward kid. If you got a, you know, 3-year-old, 5-year-old, and you got to stop them, the best way is always right by the back of the neck where you hold them. And that kind of controls them, doesn't hurt them. And you do the same thing with a shark. Now, not only am I a parent, but I'm a grandparent. My kids lived through it, so I don't care if you don't like what I just said. They're all fine. But hold them by the back of the head. They don't get hurt, and you control where that mouth is so they don't bite you. if you hold them by the tail, they will just whip around and bite you.
Yes.
Grab a kid by the ankle. He's going to turn around and bite your wrist. Right. Same thing with a shark. That's just Absolutely. The way it works. So but the back of the head is a very safe place to grab, and you will never get bit, and you won't hurt the fish. Don't crush their gills. Your thumb and your middle finger, one thumb will be on one side of the head, your middle finger on the other side. Don't press into the gill openings. Just hold. Don't crush. All right. Cold days. It's a good time to do a little extra maintenance on the reels and
Absolutely.
Rods.
Absolutely. Definitely. I mean, you're really not doing anything because you don't want to go outside and freeze or get wind blowing. And it's not real safe in a boat for the most part. So, you know, if your options are limited to what you can do, why not clean up your tackle? You know, go through your reel, give it a light cleaning with some fresh water, and then maybe even touch it with a couple drops of oil. Or
if I'm going to clean the outside of a reel, I like the Pen Reel Cleaner. Reel Magic is good. Mm-hmm. The Get Some Spray is good. But let's say that Pen Reel Cleaner. What I'm going to do with that is I'm just going to take and shoot a little bit on the reel. I'm going to have one rag for wiping the oil around because I want it to actually get a little bit of oil on it because I want to spread that oil around. If you've ever washed your car, you go out, you're washing the car, you got all the soap and everything on it, you take the hose, you rinse it all down, what do you got all over the thing? Soap spots. You got little spots everywhere. And it's the same thing when you're trying to get salt off a fishing tackle. If all you do is rinse it off, it still leaves all those salt spots on you. You're still going to have little spots of that. Rinsing is good, and that's what you do when you don't have time. But you get a day where you really want, you know, and let's face it, some of these reels are expensive. Spray that Get Some Pen Reel Cleaner on there. Wipe it all down and really kind of wipe it around and let the oil sit on it. Get up and wipe off the guides. And take the rag and do the, you know, little buffer shoe shine thing where the guide connects to the rod. That's where salt will usually build up, and it's going to corrode that guide off. And if you see any of your guides that where the paint is chipped on the casting guides, take a little bit of a touch-up paint from, you know, get some paint, touch-up paint from an automotive store. It's not very expensive. And just cover up those nicks and chips. That paint is protecting the metal. The reason black guides work so much better than silver guides or gold is because that black paint literally keeps the salt from getting to the metal for a year or two. So, what the heck was that? Oh, the bottle popped. Scared my little self. I thought you finally had enough of me. We're going to shoot. All right, I give up. Help. All right. But by wiping it off, that's, and then if you want to, you know, actually get the oil of it off and not just leave a film on there, take another dry rag and clean it. But I use the same one over and over again so I keep that oil spreading. But did that make sense? Or?
Yeah. Oh, that was pretty good.
All right. Let's see. Know,
sometimes you need a couple actual drops of legitimate oil, too, though. Like, if you find your bail is sticking just a little bit or your handle is squeaking just a little bit, just a simple drop of regular fishing reel oil
in
those couple spots. Because you don't want to take apart the reel if you can help it.
The way to do it is take the spool off. Take the drag cap, loosen up, take the spool off, set it down. And turn the handle until the shaft, the main shaft, is extending out as far as possible from the reel. Put a couple half drops of oil along the main shaft and then turn it in. Half drops, boys and girls, because if you put a lot of oil on there, it's just going to run off. And as you turn the reel, the rotor is going to spin it out anywhere. There's a very tiny opening between the shaft and the little tube it runs in. You get a couple of half drops on there, turn it in three or four times, then another couple half drops turn in three or four times. Now, leaving the spool off, go to the side of the reel and take the handle cover off. Now, when you get the handle cover off, leave the handle on the other side, holding the reel so that that opening is now, you can look into it. Look, you're going to see a hole, and around the outside, you've got the reel body itself, and just inside of there, you're going to see the bearings or the bearing covers. Put some oil around on those bearings. Just get some oil. It comes with a little thin tube. And the reason I say get some is it will rejuvenate the grease inside of the reel. Some oils do not react well with some grease, and it can actually make things worse. The Get Some is the best I've found for making grease greasy again. because grease, as soon as salt water hits it, turns it hard and cakey, and it makes it, the reel won't turn. Put that around there and then turn it in. What's immediately below those bearings? Every main gear in the reel. So you're letting the oil, gravity will run it right through that bearing, and it will spread out over the gears. So don't turn the handle fast. Nice and easy and slow. Allow that oil to run through, run over the gears. Then once you've done that, take the handle off, put it on the other side, then do that side of the reel while you turn the handle from below. And now once you've got those two done, put the handle back on. And on the correct side, put a little bit more oil on the opposite side, turn it in, put the cap back on. Now, let's go back and re-oil the main shaft again. What you're going to do is put a couple of half drops. The reason I do it twice is because, remember, it will only accept a half a drop of oil at once. That shaft is riding through a little tube. The grease gets up inside that tube, starts to get hard, making the reel hard to turn, hard to use. So that little bit of get some oil is going to loosen the grease up in that tube, make the reel much easier to use. But you have to do all these steps, otherwise you're just backing up. You've already got it this far. Let's do the last couple of things. Number one is the handle of the reel, not the arm, but the place where you actually put your fingers. You're going to take that, kind of hold it away from the handle arm itself, and put a little drop of oil between that grip and the thing, and then just take your finger and turn it, trying to get that oil to go inside there up against the steel shaft it's running on. That's going to free that up. How many reels have you seen, Robert, where somebody comes in and says, my reels froze up, and you go to turn the handle, it won't move, but if you just turn the arm, it works fine. But that little paddle tail is just frozen into place.
Yes. Yeah, that paddle freezes up pretty easily for a lot of people.
So you just put a little bit of drops of oil between the paddle handle and the arm, getting that oil underneath. Make sure that'll free spin easy. Now your last step is to go hold the reel with the spool end main shaft down so that you're going to go right where the bail opens up. You're going to open and close your bail, and on the top of that, there's a little round section. You're going to put a little bit of oil around the top of that and open and close the bail half a dozen times slowly. You're letting gravity take that oil, run it underneath that side cover place for the bail arm. Then you're going to flip it over, do the other thing. Remember, if it's pointed down and you put that oil at the top of that, it will go underneath it in, lubricate that whole thing. Your bail's going to work five times easy, and you don't have to take anything apart. So right. This is really simple to do. Now, we're coming up here.
Wait a second.
Okay, go ahead.
The one thing that you didn't mention, and it's for a reason, you mentioned get some and the pen reel cleaner for cleaning and oiling your reel.
Yeah,
you didn't mention WD-40 at all.
No, WD-40 won't work for this.
Right.
It's a water-based thing. It's water displacement. Takes the water out. It's great. It's okay to clean the outside of your reel with WD-40, but you can't put it inside. It does no good.
It's a cleaning product. It's not by any means an oiling.
No, it doesn't lubricate it.
Yeah. So
now, I love it as a fish attractor.
Absolutely.
WD-40, I sat there and watched a school of skipjacks one day, and I'm seeing these fish hitting and hitting and hitting, and it's just going crazy. I'm like, what the heck's going on? And all of a sudden, I'm seeing something go pshht up into the air. I get the boat over and look, and there's one of those big industrial-sized cans of WD-40. You can tell it easy. It's yellow and blue. And the fish were hitting it, hitting it, hitting it. And every once in a while, one would hit the little nozzle end, and you'd see a spurt of it go up in the air, and they'd all start beating the heck out of that can again.
Wow.
It was literally visual proof to me, and I watched this happen, that fish like the smell and taste of WD-40. You can spray it on your lures, great way to clean your line up, stuff like that, because it is a fish attractant.
Right.
It actually works. So,
but it is not something you use to lubricate your reel with, because a lot of people do, because it's convenient and easy for them, because they've almost always got a can of it laying around, and guys come in and they wonder why their reel is so gumped up.
Yeah.
And it's because they hammered the hole inside with that, and it just doesn't do them any good.
No, you're as normal. See, that's why you're here, to keep me on the straight and narrow, making sure I don't mess this up. Good call. So your best bets this week, crappie, trout, sheephead, bass, and black drum. We talked about where the black drum are in the canal. And I still say there's probably more trout in the canals and on the east side of the harbor. So if you're just going stir crazy, cabin fever today, you live on a canal, you can put your boat in at Port Charlotte Beach or some of the other ones, idle up and down the canals, pull in a lure, and you can catch a lot of trout that way. Anything you want to get in on the show here, Robert?
No, it's going to start to warm up over the next couple of days, so I think we're going to start to see an increase on the fish activity again by this weekend or by the end of the weekend anyway. The future forecast for the weather looks like it's going to start to get really nice.
RJ, did you hear the weather report for this weekend?
We're supposed to look 70s, I think they're saying, for the weekend.
So it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah,
so
it'll be a nice change from the cold.
All right, where's your favorite breakfast spot, RJ? Did I mean to put you on the spot?
About a Hungry Hound I like.
The Hungry Hound here in town?
That's right.
All right. Robert, where do you like?
I like Elena's in Punta Gorda.
Elena's,
yeah. That's a
now,
good one.
I kind of like that new breakfast place there.
House of Breakfast.
House of Breakfast is good, and they got that Burger Barn that has a good breakfast,
Burger,
too.
Burger Barn has a real good breakfast there in Punta Gorda.
We're bringing those up because, what was the name of that place in Northport?
Hungry Hound.
Hungry Hound.
Hungry Hound in Englewood.
Hungry Hound in Englewood.
Yeah.
All right. Now, when you go to these places, go there in the morning, have an amazing breakfast, finish your coffee, go home, put the boat together, be on the water around 10 o'clock.
Yeah, you don't get up early this time of year.
That we're lucky.
Let it warm up. Let the fish get a little bit active.
Right. Know? So you're in an amazing thing. We've got some amazing breakfast spots in Southwest Florida. Go out and enjoy them. Relax. Have a good breakfast. Go back to the house. Put your stuff together. Go out on the water. And you're going to have an amazing weekend. And that's really, I would say, the crust of the whole thing. Crust, unless you're like me and get biscuits. And there is no crust. Because
right.
I'm kind of a biscuit guy.
There
so,
you go.
Anything you want to add to this, RJ?
Just a wonderful show. We're just about out of time.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got to be running out of time. How much more time we got here?
That should tell you.
I think we're out of time. Robert, any last words?
Nope. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it.
Boy, don't you know, you guys go out there, catch yourselves a couple of trays of ice cubes out there. You're going to have a great weekend. Anyway, thank you, guys. Fish and Frank, Robert, RJ, the whole gang here at WKDW. Love you guys. We'll see you next week.
Okay, we're clear.